But Roger McDonald joins me in studio now. Welcome on the program.
Thank you very much.
Now, we ought to start with, you once said you'd never write about the sea, and what influenced you to change your mind and write this book in particular?
I was influenced by going to New Zealand. I'm married to a Kiwi, and we started going over to the Auckland area years ago, and I could never connect. You know, I'm from the country. I live in the country in southeastern New South Wales, and I'm used to the crackle of dry gum leaves and the smell of bushfire smoke and the different light and the different heat and the different cold and the lack of rain. And over in Auckland, you know, misty, wet. And I thought, you know, what do people do here to connect to this place? And after a couple of years, I realised it was sailing. Everyone I knew grew up, you know, six or seven, going to dinghy clubs and sort of segueing through 10, 8 years into competitive sailing. And it's just a really, really big part of New Zealand life, particularly in the top of the North Island. And it's a great area to sail. So I started teaching myself in a little 12-foot dinghy. It's too big to fit in it. And I was much, much older than I should have been. And so, you know, now I've learned enough to know when it's too dangerous to push on. And I've made a lot of friends. And I kind of, like, writing, you do things in your life and you do them sometimes because you're getting away from writing. You know, like that was a get out of the house, you know, go sailing, get on the water. It's nothing to do with writing. And then gradually after a few years, it creeps up and you realise you've got this whole subject area that's been waiting there underneath, you know, like a whale to rise up and hit you. And that's what happened with the sea chase. You know, the theme or the story just came through, and there's a longer history to it than that, but just in summary, that's what happened.
And I suppose to join upon that, the vivid descriptions of our landscapes, you know, the Aussie bush there and country life, and now the sea that draws your attention to write about. What is it about landscapes that you find so intriguing?
Well, you know, we are ourselves as human beings. We're physical objects. You know, we're material objects, and we relate to everything material around us. And sometimes I think I'm probably a bit ultra-sensitive to landscape. I wouldn't claim anything special about that, but there are some... I think we all do. You know, what do you think? You know, that we... There are some places where we feel comfortable and at home, and we think that's a beautiful place. And so it's kind of inland Australia. I grew up in the bush. My father was a minister. We lived in country towns, but always on farms. And I always thought from a young age, that's where I'd like to live. I'd like to live on a piece of land. I certainly don't want to work with farm animals. Wouldn't mind riding a horse. And that's what I did in life. You know, I've been lucky enough to do it for many, many years.
And do you think it's that idea of the home and our conception of the home that creates that connection to a landscape?
Totally attachment, yeah. Home, attachment, and it becomes part of ourselves, our personality, you know. We identify the place where we belong as the person we're becoming as we go through life. So with the creation of a novel, you bring a character, the character feels, this character's out of nowhere, but then you start sort of putting the little spots of paint onto the canvas, and you discover that you build a character up out of little bits of your own life. So the main female character in this, she comes from inland Australia. She hadn't seen the sea growing up. The greatest sense of the sea she'd had as a kid was the Darling River flooding from horizon to horizon out near Bourke, where I lived for half my childhood. And then in her early 20s, she starts sailing, and that's a new discovery, and you know, I convey that through the novel.
Now, you spoke about that character there. Do these characters draw inspiration from any real-life figures?
Yes, they do, but not modelled on real-life, but there's a kind of a sense. I actually, to fill in that answer, I spent a couple of years before I wrote a sea chase writing a book about lone sailors, about people like one of the most famous lone sailors in Australia is Kay Cotty, who sailed, she was the first woman to sail alone around the world non-stop. She did that in 1987-88. And the first man to do it was English. His name's Robin Knox Johnston. He did it in 20 years before Kay Cotty. So there's a sort of a feeling behind this book that the experiences of those two-lane sailors and a few others feed into the plot as it develops. It's not about those people, it's not about anyone in particular, but the characters couldn't have happened without my inspiration being based on those those people who wrote their own stories.
I want to touch on those ideas of sailing solo around the world. What do you think it is that drives people to do such a thing? It seems extremely scary on one level for me, kind of taking on something like that. But do you have any theories now?
Yeah, I do. I have a very strong theory, and that is it's never been done. I can possibly do it. I'm going to give it a try. Does that sound like a theory?
Sure does to me. I mean, and do you think there's something about that, I suppose, taking it away from stone, but also thinking about it in a broader sense, that this is, it's the reason, I suppose, why someone wants to climb Mount Everest or things like that. These are kind of human achievements, feats of human achievement, kind of taking humans to, I suppose, a place where they feel like they can expend upon themselves almost?
Yeah. It is, and it's a sport and a recreation motive, but it's also a very human motive, and it's the human spirit. I always think that when you get a bit wiser as you get older, and I think that we're always kind of in the act of becoming who we eventually become. I mean, that's a bit obvious, it's a cliche, but you know, we can guide ourselves by various achievements, you know, kind of, and we want to feel sometimes a little bit better than we think we are, you know, like, oh, I'm just an ordinary person. How would I, you know, do something special? Well, maybe I'll just, you know, I'll refine my sailing technique a bit, or my tennis technique, or my mountaineering technique, or my writing technique.
And I suppose, broadly in Australian literature, it seems to me that the authors are really able to capture landscape in particular. Do you think there's something in unique to Australia and this idea of landscape? Do you think perhaps it both the sense perhaps from our first Australians who had such a value and placed such an intrinsic relationship with land?
Yes, I think that is really, really true. I think, you know, friends from overseas, writers from overseas, we often talk about what is the distinctive cultural mark of Australia, and I think I always call it the voice in the landscape, and that word voice probably needs a bit of explaining. The voice is the painter, or the voice is the singer, or the writer, or whatever, you know. The voice can also be a sports person. You know, in New Zealand, the voice of the sailor is a dominant voice. In Australia, we don't know so much about our great sailing achievements because we've got such a massive land. There's so much space in Australia, and it's such a unique ecology, and the colours and the life here is endlessly fascinating, and I think we express that as artists.
Now, you've mentioned already, you've lived on, grown up in farms, and had a bit to do with Sydney, as well as New Zealand and many other places. Where do you feel most at home?
I still feel most at home in the bush. In the bush, with that, you know, the crackly leaves, bushfire smoke, looking out the window and, you know, seeing a wallaby knocking a few leaves outside the window, and a echidna walking past, and a snake or two. The light and the birds are just, you know, an explosion in Australia. It's just unbelievable, and the colour of the bark, all of that. You know, like I sometimes walk around, especially in like the last couple of months, you know, where spring's coming on and it's been very dry, but you just get up early in the morning and walk around, and it's like being in a dream. It is so beautiful and still and magic.
Indeed, it's a fascinating picture you present there for us, and tell us a little bit more about where we can pick up a copy of the novel, because just hearing you speak, I think, will really invoke a sense of wanting to read and hear and just experience your words on a page.
Well, you can go to any good bookshop if you can find one, and I think in Sydney you're lucky. You can find quite a few very close to where you are listening from now. It's there, it's also an e-book. So you can get it on your device. So, as the author, I can only endorse what you say, and that is go out and try and find a copy.
Fantastic. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you, Roger. Thank you for joining the Daily.
Thank you very much, Miles. I enjoyed it.